Chapter 24. Always going away, but never does. This is the haughty, or scornful model. As to domestic happiness, and holy families, they should come very cheap, for there are lumps of them, all up the steps. And the cream of the thing is, that they are all the falsest vagabonds in the world, especially made up for the purpose, and having no counterparts in Rome, or any other part of the habitable globe. My recent mention of the carnival, reminds me of its being said to be a mock morning in the ceremony with which it closes, for the gaieties and merrymakings before Lent. And this again reminds me of the real funerals and mourning processions of Rome, which, like those in most other parts of Italy, are rendered chiefly remarkable to a foreigner, by the indifference with which the mere clay is universally regarded, after life has left it. And this is not from the survivors, having had time to dissociate the memory of the dead from their well-remembered appearance and form on earth. For the interment follows too speedily after death, for that almost all was taking place within 24 hours, and, sometimes, within 12. At Rome, there is the same arrangement of pits in a great, bleak, open, dreary space, that I have already described as existing in Genoa. When I visited it, at noonday, I saw a solitary coffin of plain deal, uncovered by any shroud or pall, and so slightly made, that the hoof of any wandering mule would have crushed it in. Carelessly tumbled down, all on one side, on the door of one of the pits and there left, by itself, in the wind and sunshine. How does it come to be left here? I asked the man who showed me the place. It was brought here half an hour ago, he said. I remembered to have met the procession, on its return, straggling away at a good round pace. When will it be put in the pit? I asked him. When the cart comes, and it is open tonight, he said. How much does it cost to be brought here in this way, instead of coming in the cart? I asked him. 10 scudi, he said, about £2. 2.6 English. The other bodies, for whom nothing is paid, are taken to the church of the Santa Maria della Consolazione, he continued, and brought here all together, in the cart at night. I stood, a moment, looking at the coffin, which had two initial letters scrawled upon the top, and turned away, with an expression in my face, I suppose, of not much liking its exposure in that manner. For he said, shrugging his shoulders with great vivacity, and giving a pleasant smile, but he's dead, Signor, he's dead. Why not? Among the innumerable churches, there is one I must select for separate mention. It is the Church of the Arcoeli, supposed to be built on the site of the old temple of Jupiter Feretrius, and approached, on one side, by a long steep flight of steps, which seem incomplete without some group of bearded soothsayers on the top. It is remarkable for the possession of a miraculous bambino, or wooden doll, representing the infant savior. And I first saw this miraculous bambino, in legal phrase, in manner following, that is to say. We had strolled into the church one afternoon, and were looking down its long vista of gloomy pillars, for all these ancient churches built upon the ruins of old temples, are dark and sad, when the brave came running in, with a grin upon his face, that stretched it from ear to ear, and implored us to follow him, without a moment's delay, as they were going to show the bambino to a select party. We accordingly hurried off to a sort of chapel, or sacristy, hard by the chief altar, but not in the church itself, where the select party, consisting of two or three Catholic gentlemen and ladies, not Italians, were already assembled. And where one hollow-cheeked young monk was lighting up divers candles, while another was putting on some clerical robes over his coarse brown habit. The candles were on a kind of altar, and above it were two delectable figures, such as you would see at any English fair, representing the Holy Virgin and Saint Joseph, as I suppose, bending in devotion over a wooden box, or coffer, which was shut. The hollow-cheeked monk, number one, having finished lighting the candles, went down on his knees, in a corner, before this set piece, and the monk number two, having put on a pair of highly ornamented and gold bespattered gloves, lifted down the coffer, with great reverence, and set it on the altar. Then, with many genuflections, and muttering certain prayers, he opened it, and let down the front, and took off sundry coverings of satin and lace from the inside. The ladies had been on their knees from the commencement, and the gentleman now dropped down devoutly, as he exposed to view a little wooden doll, in face very like General Tom Thumb, the American dwarf. Gorgeously dressed in satin and gold lace, and actually blazing with rich jewels. There was scarcely a spot upon its little breast, or neck, or stomach, but was sparkling with the costly offerings of the faithful. Presently, he lifted it out of the box, and carrying it round among the kneelers, set its face against the forehead of every one, and tendered its clumsy foot to them to kiss, a ceremony which they all performed down to a dirty little ragamuffin of a boy who had walked in from the street. When this was done, he laid it in the box again. And the company, rising, drew near, and commended the jewels in whispers. In good time, he replaced the coverings, shut up the box, put it back in its place, locked up the whole concerned holy family, and all, behind a pair of folding doors, took off his priestly vestments, and received the customary small charge, apostrophe while his companion, by means of an extinguisher fastened to the end of a long stick, put out the lights, one after another. The candles being all extinguished, and the money all collected, they retired, and so did the spectators. I met this same bambino, in the street a short time afterwards, going, in great state, to the house of some sick person. It is taken to all parts of Rome for this purpose, constantly. But, I understand that it is not always as successful as could be wished. For, making its appearance at the bedside of weak and nervous people in extremity, accompanied by a numerous escort, it not unfrequently frightens them to death. It is most popular in cases of childbirth, where it has done such wonders, that if a lady be longer than usual in getting through her difficulties, a messenger is dispatched, with all speed, to solicit the immediate attendance of the bambino. It is a very valuable property, and much confided in especially by the religious body to whom it belongs. I am happy to know that it is not considered immaculate, by some who are good Catholics, and who are behind the scenes, from what was told me by the near relation of a priest, himself a Catholic, and a gentleman of learning and intelligence. This priest made my informant promise that he would, on no account, allow the bambino to be born into the bedroom of a sick lady, in whom they were both interested. For, apostrophe said he, if they, the monks, trouble her with it, and intrude themselves into her room, it will certainly kill her. Apostrophe my informant accordingly looked out of the window when it came, and, with many thanks, declined to open the door. He endeavored, in another case of which he had no other knowledge than such as he gained as a passer-by at the moment, to prevent its being carried into a small unwholesome chamber, where a poor girl was dying. But, he strove against it unsuccessfully, and she expired, while the crowd were pressing round her bed. Among the people who drop into St. Peter's at their leisure, to kneel on the pavement, and say a quiet prayer, there are certain schools and seminaries, priestly and otherwise, that come in, 20 or 30 strong. These boys always kneel down in single file, one behind the other, with a tall grim master in a black gown, bringing up the rear. Like a pack of cards arranged to be tumbled down at a touch, with a disproportionately large knave of clubs at the end. When they have had a minute or so at the chief altar, they scramble up, and filing off to the chapel of the Madonna, or the sacrament, flop down again in the same order, so that if anybody did stumble against the master, a general and sudden overthrow of the whole line must inevitably ensue. The scene in all the churches is the strangest possible. The same monotonous, heartless, drowsy chanting, always going on, the same dark building, darker from the brightness of the street without, the same lamps dimly burning, the selfsame people kneeling here and there, turned towards you, from one altar or other, the same priest's back, with the same large cross embroidered on it, however different in size, in shape, in wealth, in architecture, this church is from that, it is the same thing still. There are the same dirty beggars stopping in their muttered prayers to beg, the same miserable cripples exhibiting their deformity at the doors, the same blind men, rattling little pots like kitchen pepper casters, their depositories for alms, the same preposterous crowns of silver stuck upon the painted heads of single saints and virgins in crowded pictures, so that a little figure on a mountain has a headdress bigger than the temple in the foreground, or adjacent miles of landscape. The same favorite shriner figure, smothered with little silver hearts and crosses, and the like. The staple trade and show of all the jewelers. The same odd mixture of respect and indecorum, faith and phlegm. Kneeling on the stones, and spitting on them, loudly, getting up from prayers to beg a little, or to pursue some other worldly matter, and then kneeling down again, to resume the contrite supplication at the point where it was interrupted. In one church, a kneeling lady got up from her prayer, for a moment, to offer us her card, as a teacher of music, and in another, a sedate gentleman with a very thick walking staff, arose from his devotions to Belibor his dog, who was growling at another dog, and whose yelps and howls resounded through the church, as his master quietly relapsed into his former train of meditation, keeping his eye upon the dog, at the same time, nevertheless. Above all, there is always a receptacle for the contributions of the faithful, in some form or other. Sometimes, it is a money box, set up between the worshipper, and the wooden life-size figure of the Redeemer. Sometimes, it is a little chest for the maintenance of the Virgin. Sometimes, an appeal on behalf of a popular bambino. Sometimes, a bag at the end of a long stick, thrust among the people here and there, and vigilantly jingled by an active sacristan. But there it always is, and, very often, in many shapes in the same church, and doing pretty well in all. Nor is it wanting in the open air, the streets and roads, for often as you are walking along, thinking about anything rather than a tin canister, that object pounces out upon you from a little house by the wayside, and on its top is painted, "For the souls in purgatory," apostrophe an appeal which the bearer repeats a great many times, as he rattles it before you, much as Punch rattles the cracked bell which his sanguine disposition makes an organ of. And this reminds me that some Roman altars of peculiar sanctity bear the inscription, "Every mass performed at this altar frees a soul from purgatory." Apostrophe I have never been able to find out the charge for one of these services, but they should needs be expensive. There are several crosses in Rome too, the kissing of which confers indulgences for varying terms. That in the center of the Colosseum is worth 100 days, and people may be seen kissing it from morning to night. It is curious that some of these crosses seem to acquire an arbitrary popularity. This very one among them. In another part of the Colosseum there is a cross upon a marble slab, with the inscription, "Who kisses this cross shall be entitled to 240 days indulgence." Apostrophe but I saw no one person kiss it, though, day after day, I sat in the arena, and saw scores upon scores of peasants pass it, on their way to kiss the other. To single out details from the great dream of Roman churches, would be the wildest occupation in the world. but St. Stefano Rotondo, a damp, mildewed vault of an old church in the outskirts of Rome, will always struggle uppermost in my mind, by reason of the hideous paintings with which its walls are covered. These represent the martyrdoms of saints and early Christians, and such a panorama of horror and butchery no man could imagine in his sleep, though he were to eat a whole pig raw, for supper. Gray-bearded men being boiled, fried, grilled, crimped, singed, eaten by wild beasts, worried by dogs, buried alive, torn asunder by horses, chopped up small with hatchets. Women having their breasts torn with iron pincers, their tongues cut out, their ears screwed off, their jaws broken, their bodies stretched upon the rack, or skinned upon the stake, or crackled up and melted in the fire. These are among the mildest subjects. So insisted on, and labored at, besides, that every sufferer gives you the same occasion for wonder as poor old Duncan awoke, in Lady Macbeth, when she marveled at his having so much blood in him. There is an upper chamber in the Mamerton prisons, over what is said to have been, and very possibly may have been the dungeon of St. Peter. This chamber is now fitted up as an oratory, dedicated to that saint, and it lives, as a distinct and separate place, in my recollection too. It is very small and low-roofed, and the dread and gloom of the ponderous, obdurate old prison are on it, as if they had come up in a dark mist through the floor. Hanging on the walls, among the clustered votive offerings, are objects, at once strangely in keeping, and strangely at variance, with the place: rusty daggers, knives, pistols, clubs, divers instruments of violence and murder, brought here, fresh from use, and hung up to propitiate offended heaven. As if the blood upon them would drain off in consecrated air, and have no voice to cry with. It is all so silent and so close, and tomb-like, and the dungeons below are so black and stealthy, and stagnant, and naked, that this little dark spot becomes a dream within a dream. And in the vision of great churches which come rolling past me like a sea, it is a small wave by itself, that melts into no other wave, and does not flow on with the rest. It is an awful thing, to think of the enormous caverns, that are entered from some Roman churches, and undermine the city. Many churches have crypts and subterranean chapels of great size, which, in the ancient time, were baths, and secret chambers of temples, and what not. But I do not speak of them. Beneath the church of St. Giovanni and St. Paolo, there are the jaws of a terrific range of caverns, hewn out of the rock, and said to have another outlet underneath the Colosseum. Tremendous darknesses of vast extent, half buried in the earth and unexplorable, where the dull torches, flashed by the attendants, glimmer down long ranges of distant vaults branching to the right and left, like streets in a city of the dead, and show the cold damp stealing down the walls, drip-drop, drip-drop, to join the pools of water that lie here and there, and never saw, or never will see, one ray of the sun. Some accounts make these the prisons of the wild beasts destined for the amphitheater, some the prisons of the condemned gladiators, some, both. But the legend most appalling to the fancy is, that in the upper range, for there are two stories of these caves, the early Christians destined to be eaten at the Colosseum shows, heard the wild beasts, hungry for them, roaring down below, until, upon the night and solitude of their captivity, there burst the sudden noon and life of the vast theater crowded to the parapet, and of these, their dreaded neighbors, bounding in. Below the church of San Sebastiano, 2 miles beyond the gate of San Sebastiano, on the Appian Way, is the entrance to the catacombs of Rome quarries in the old time, but afterwards the hiding places of the Christians. These ghastly passages have been explored for 20 miles, and form a chain of labyrinths, 60 miles in circumference. A gaunt Franciscan friar, with a wild bright eye, was our only guide, down into this profound and dreadful place. The narrow ways and openings hither and thither, coupled with the dead and heavy air, soon blotted out, in all of us, any recollection of the track by which we had come. And I could not help thinking, good heaven, if, in a sudden fit of madness, he should dash the torches out, or if he should be seized with a fit, what would become of us? On we wandered, among martyrs' graves, passing great subterranean vaulted roads, diverging in all directions, and choked up with heaps of stones, that thieves and murderers may not take refuge there, and form a population under Rome, even worse than that which lives between it and the sun. Graves, 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 graves of men, of women, of their little children, who ran crying to the persecutors, "We are Christians! We are Christians!" That they might be murdered with their parents, graves with the palm of martyrdom roughly cut into their stone boundaries, and little niches, made to hold a vessel of the martyr's blood, graves of some who lived down here, for years together, ministering to the rest, and preaching truth, and hope, and comfort, from the rude altars, that bear witness to their fortitude at this hour. More roomy graves, but far more terrible, where hundreds, being surprised, were hemmed in and walled up, buried before death, and killed by slow starvation. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.